Welcome, everyone, to the Pop Culture Podcast by Fantastic Geek. We continue our summertime Star Wars Rebels series. My name is Matt. Joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Choski nawa uchosa? little Rodian stuck in my throat there.
As it's apt to happen, I suppose. Today we are doing episode 108, which, as we've talked before, could also be considered the 9th and the 7th episode. But it's entitled Empire Day. So if you're going to be watching along with us with anything other than Empire Day, then you probably aren't starting with a shot of the grassy plains of Lothal, although many episodes start that way, so I guess that's possible.
It was just the thing that I wanted to say. It's amazing how often they start in similar locations and similar beats on this show. Yeah.
Well, I guess they have a pattern to them or something. But I know what we have is we have the first shot of the episode ready to go, and it's paused maybe a split second in. If you're watching along at home, you get your episode ready. Pete, are you ready?
Absolutely.
Then we're going to go on go. 3, 2, 1, go. And this is an episode that I remember very fondly. It's got a good kind of vibe to it.
And it's a little bit of a fake out. We thought we were going to get the rural setting, and instead we're, you know, urban. They're going to go into the bar here, if I'm remembering correctly. But as Sabine is looking out, Kanan and Ezra are in a field here doing Jedi magic.
Now, should we look into any subtext of Sabine looking out at the two of them, or is it just kind of a narrative connect the dots? We're in the city. She looks out. Now we're out with them. Is there maybe some teen-like in her heart?
I don't think so. I think she's looking out the two of them and not Ezra. I love the little critter here, the Loth cat, which is glimpsed a couple times throughout the series.
It's a fun little critter. It really is. Pete, I think it's worth mentioning at this point, as we hear the dulcet tones of Freddie Prinze Jr., to ask, what happened to Freddie Prinze Jr.? He was like, you know, he was like Mr. Hot in Hollywood for a good stretch there, and all of a sudden he marries the Buffy, and is he stay at home? Is he? I know he's had some involvement with the WWE/F. What's up with old FP2?
And he was on 24, and you know, then he's having back surgery. I don't know. It's quite a mystery. Maybe we need to ask the Force, Matt, what happened.
Well, apparently he very much hated his time on 24, so hopefully he likes the Star Wars Rebels experience a whole lot better.
By all accounts, he does. And now that his wife is doing a voice for them in season 2, probably help.
A mysterious voice.
Yes.
It really is an incredible cast that they have. I mean, I don't know that any of the names of the main bunch are particularly well known, but to have some of the voice talent that you have. Oh, nope. Put that slingshot away, buddy. You know my thoughts on that.
I got a call. Shenanigans here that you would send TIE fighter pilots to canvas the local watering hole feels like it's a job for stormtroopers, Matt.
Particularly, I mean, look, it'd be one thing if this is ye olde watering hole in the middle of nowhere, but you know, we're back in, what is the name of the city anyway? Just, is it Capital City?
I believe, yeah.
That's like I think that's where they built the monorail in the famed Simpsons episode. Do you know this character's name, Pete?
That is Joe, Matt.
Also called Old Joe.
Yes, and I love that he's wearing a like strange harmonizer thing over his hammerhead.
Indeed. Well, that is because he can't speak basic, which I'm sure, as you know, and most of our listeners know, is the common tongue, which we are hearing as the Anglais. I did an entire season watching this show, not knowing that that was Brent Spiner.
I'm just learning this now.
It absolutely is Brent Spiner. I mean, when you're listening for it, you can hear it.
How I hear it, yeah. Love that there's a clone trooper helmet behind there, that outside on the bar, above the bar is really kind of the hull of a Republic gunship from the Clone Wars. So again, the look and the aesthetic here, not the wild, wild west that really episode 4, the original Star Wars, really kind of wanted to espouse, but kind of picking up the pieces in between, a post WW2, if you will.
It certainly is welcome that this show takes us back to the Wild West frontier, which we see in episode 4. There's an incredible watchability with all of the with the canonical flow from the prequel trilogy, which is so kind of high end in its locale and the technology that they have, not the technology that it was made with, but you know, the fancy planets that they're on. You have Clone Wars in between two of those movies, and then here we're kind of taking it more basic as we head to the planet that is farthest from the brightest center of the universe, metaphorically, in episode 4.
Ezra's hideout, not really strategically chosen.
Well, but isn't this hideout like his old house?
Yeah, but to have this pointy, you know, tower in the middle of nowhere, it's just a little conspicuous.
Wait, I'm sorry. I may have looked away for a moment. What? So he was in his tower pointy thing and not like...
Yes.
Okay. Because I know in this episode we're headed to the place in town where he used to live with Ma and Pa. No, I totally agree. And I still call into question what kind of empire this is that doesn't require him to be in school. Or maybe they're trying to keep the Outer Rim people down.
Love the upbeat version of the Imperial March done here. Just a nice homage.
It certainly is. And seeing the troop transport go by, and again in the background there, did you see the tweet from our pal Ian in the UK? That's Zort70 on Twitter. Make sure you visit his website, zort.co.uk, that they've now remade that into a toy.
Yes.
As he noted, we've gone from toy to on-screen to toy again.
Wonderful symmetry.
Part of the sneakiness of this first season that kind of really comes up from behind you and bites you. Oh man, Pete, sure is a pretty ship. You think we'll ever see it again?
Yeah, I think we will.
It's nice that in this scene they have the pilot's helmet off. I think it was perhaps a bit of a cheat in the bar scene where they all had their helmets on for so long. You know, probably right. Just so we don't need to animate faces and such.
And that he's decorated with some red on there, that he's an ace, a red baron, if you will. Some further characterization, even though we're not getting his... Oh, look, it's the little guys from that place. The Ugnaughts.
From what place are they?
That would be
from
Bespin or Cloud City, known to the layman, Matt.
You could just call it the Bespin mining operation, and I would know the particulars.
You find it at all odd that there are fireworks in the Star Wars universe long before the Chinese invented them?
No, because I know that at the end of Return of the Jedi there are fireworks.
But this precedes Return of the Jedi, of course.
Yeah, but I mean, you could still be X number of years ahead of time. Let me ask you this, Pete. Are Empire and Jedi the same number of years after each other and after episode 4 as they are chronologically in the movies?
No.
Okay. So we pretend, well, I mean, my point being, we're maybe 8 years or so before the Empire falls, perhaps 10.
This is the 15th anniversary, this episode, of the Emperor taking power. So, yeah, the math is officially and unofficially a little hazy.
Well, I mean, not to turn this into a math discussion, it's if they say it's 15 years after, okay, that means that the Emperor has been in power 20 years in episode 4. And then, I mean, I don't know. I personally see, what am I trying to say? I kind of think of Empire as 3 years after A New Hope and Jedi 3 years after that.
Well, to think that Han Solo was on ice for 3 years, I think, is a little extreme.
Hmm. That's fair.
I don't think we're meant to believe that.
I agree. Maybe 6 months.
Thinking, yeah.
I've often thought, by the way, Pete, that the end of Empire Strikes Back is 20 minutes into Return of the Jedi. Like, as a kid, when I'd rewatch, I'd be like, and now there's that great shot of them leaving Tatooine, and the X-Wing goes over the camera and the Falcon goes under. Now I will turn it off for a little bit. But anyhow, hey, back to this show. I'm still trying to figure out what we had discussed in some previous podcasts, how people like the Inquisitor are not Sith, but, you know, like, but
still wield a lightsaber, have the Sith eyes, no less.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, as I've been rereading and reading for the first time since my youth, Timothy Zahn trilogy of books, they make reference in there to Dark Jedi, and I was like, "Ooh, wow!" And I was like, "Oh!" It took me a little while to figure out they just mean Sith. Nobody had probably just come up with that word yet.
Well, I think Lucas had that. Whether or not the novelists were granted permission to use it, because it had never been spoken on the screen in the original trilogy. I think, again, it's a malleable concept.
Certainly, it took me a minute to figure out, well, what is a Dark Jedi and so on and so forth. And it was like, as I started to kind of reach that, conclusion myself, it was kind of this notion of, hey, you need to explain to people what a Sith is, and to call them a Sith does not define it, but you call them a Dark Jedi, it's like, okay, got it.
Sebo, or Rodian here, like Greedo.
I see a naming convention amongst their people.
Yeah.
This notion of kind of the fiddlesticks, what's the Keanu Reeves movie where he, Johnny Mnemonic, it's kind of that, which I realize this head wraparound thing goes all the way back to that mining operation on
the
Bespin.
The character of Lobot
is part robot.
Yes,
he probably wouldn't appreciate
part
that.
Part LoJack.
Indeed. Side note, Pete, are we ever going to see Ice Cream Dispenser Guy on Star Wars Rebels?
God, I hope so.
For people who might not be familiar with that story, can you do it justice in 10 seconds?
I can. Ice Cream Maker Guy is basically an extra in Empire Strikes Back, who they needed to give a device when they are scrambling to evacuate the city. And somebody said in 1979, here, take this ice cream maker. It looks like some futuristic apparatus that you would evacuate with. And years later, Matt, there exists an action figure of the character.
Showing that Lucasfilm knows there is no marketing opportunity too small that won't sell some
whose
action
name
figurines.
Is Wilrow Hood.
Wilrow Hood.
Oh man.
What? But Pete, in 5 years, you know, not everybody likes living in the Empire. In fact, some people hate it. But what could they possibly do about it? So, Pete, I just want to point out that last week, of course, was well, it was July 4th everywhere, but that's Independence Day in the United States. And a bit of irony that this episode was recorded during that July 4th weekend as we think about the fading empire.
Or is it?
That's... Pete, I think the empire in the next 10 years or so is going to be dealt quite a blow. I mean, that Battle of Endor, there's a lot of stuff that used to take place after that, but now it's Star Wars legend.
I love that Sebo doesn't just have the device on his head, but he's also spouting gibberish as a piece of characterization here.
A bit of his Huttese, is it not?
Yes.
Pete, did you know that I minored in Huttese when I was in college?
Did you?
No, that's not true. But I always tell the truth.
Okay.
I can never remember this guy's name because I remember Taskmaster Grint and not his boss. But I always look at him and go, dude, you never just go out in the sun? Like, you're so pasty, fella. Do you worry he's getting enough vitamin C?
Vitamin D is the sun, right?
Vitamin C, vitamin D. You know, I'm sorry. What you call vitamin D in English, I call vitamin C in basic.
I
hadn't translated it properly.
I see.
So that's my bad. I apologize to you and to our listeners. A lot in that little collision scene was not shown. We didn't see the chicken walker get hit, just it wobbling. We didn't see the parked troop transporter getting hit, just it wobbling.
Where is the camera for holographic transmissions? This is something from a practical standpoint that I don't quite understand. They're photographed, they project from beneath, they're speaking into something. Like, when we get to that technology, which, you know, is clearly life imitating art.
And art's such a great guy, too.
He is. It's going to be interesting.
Well, I think to me, the only logical way it could work is to have multiple small cameras in there. Which, not for nothing, if you're capable of streaming, you know, video and sound across light years at a time, as is the case for some of the longer transmissions, it can't be any big deal to be like, oh, we have three cameras, and it puts together a composite 3D image, you know, within the focal point of the camera, so to speak.
I don't quite understand what's going on with Agent Callus's gun that also turns into a staff, which Zeb has a different device that also does the same thing. And they have some back history together. Callus was involved in helping to exterminate Zeb's race.
Well, my understanding from either not an episode you've already watched or an episode that we have yet to do for the podcast was that it was a Agent Callis took that staff gun device from a fallen Zeb race person.
It looks Imperial in nature.
Also does make you wonder, can you bring your own rifle to the party in the Empire?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, but I mean, yeah. Agent Callis is also an agent. How many agents have we met before?
None.
So maybe he has some, you know, like some leeway to say, well, I filled out the paperwork. By necessity, I must have this exception to the code.
Or maybe he had their rifle makers craft a weapon that looks like the one that he took from a guardsman of Zeb's race.
You know what would have been great if maybe the slowest person in the bunch who only has half a brain in the personage of the Rodian friend maybe wasn't the first one to go up the gangplank, or maybe somebody using force powers picked his butt up and got him in there. The animation...
I'm not a fan of the helmet for the Inquisitor, that he needs one in the cockpit of his ship. Kind of wonky.
Well, I'm going to disagree wholeheartedly. And let's go backwards. Why does he need it? Because they may go into higher atmospheres and there may be minor damage to the windscreen, but he still needs to breathe. That's why pilots have helmets and masks for real in the real world. Number two, it's just awesome. It kind of looks like an old-time knight. Third, on HD on a big screen, it is particularly well-rendered. And there are shots where it looks 100% real. Pete, he's back.
He is.
Good old Sebo.
To Sebo.
I like to kind of blur them. Sebo. I'm not saying Zebo, mind you, with the letter Z. I'm saying Sebo. Just to your parents.
Is it possible that Zebo
to be continued
needs a placebo?
I would say no. I think that he needs full on like brain surgery to fix his self. And you know what, for many people, Pete, is like brain surgery in that it makes them feel a whole lot better in what is once again a perfect transition, is interacting with you on Twitter. How can people do so?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R, J, K-L-A-R, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 5,940 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I am personally on Twitter's Looking Back Lost, you can be in touch with the podcast in a variety of ways. We are a fantastic geek. That's fantastic with a P-H. And you can find us four ways. I'm going to tell you three. You can find us on .com. The Gmail and the Twitter. That's fantastic for all those. And what? Wait, Pete, there's more.
Yes, facebook.com/fantasticgeek with the PH, all one word. Get on there, like us today, and get in on everything that we do.
Well, with that, Pete, I will say adios to all our listeners. We'll get together again next week for the next exciting adventure of Star Wars Rebels and give you the final word.
Peace out. Chewbacca.